You are listening to The Tenants on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. To support us, visit patreon.com/ Kyle Dempster Studios. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Tenants. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined here by my co-host, Stark. Hello, Stark.
Hey.
How you doing on this wonderful Sunday?
Pretty good.
We just got off a long weekend of doing some Imperial City event in ESO. That is, for those that don't know, for those that aren't following the news, that was an event that encouraged you to go into Cyrodiil and get some bonus rewards. Pretty typical in ESO fashion, right, Stark, that you get these events that they put throughout the year to kind of spice up older content and get people to go back and do it for a certain reason.
Yeah, usually it's anniversaries or something similar, and they'll double most of the payouts in there. In this case, it's supposed to be double Telvar payouts, which is a kind of currency you can earn in PvP in the Imperial City, but you can also lose if you're fighting someone and die.
Yeah,
you lose set amounts based on whether it's another player or it's PvE mobs. But yeah, it's a split PvE, PvP zone, and yeah, go in, get extra stuff.
Yeah, and we also saw the return of a house that has been removed from the market before. For anyone that's in the house shopping thing, you got a couple more days left on the Lynchel Grand Manor that's based out of the Gold Coast there, the Dark Brotherhood DLC. So that's really cool. Good changes all around. I like what's going on here, and it looks like we're going to have a packed October between events and just a bunch of new things coming to the marketplace. Last week, we talked for a long time about different race and class combinations. As a reminder, this podcast, at least in the very early episodes here, is going to be geared at helping new players get into Elder Scrolls Online. Like any MMO, there's a lot of content period. But then on top of it, it changes over time. So if you've come back to the game after being absent 3 years, you might have missed something, mechanics may have changed a smidge. We're here to kind of guide you the best we can in September of 2018, give you the latest information. So like I said, last week we talked class and race combinations, kind of gave some ideas of what the races do, what the classes can do. Now this week, we're actually going to talk about the different type of gear you can get in the game. Stark and I, before we started this, were talking that in ESO, it's not really the class that chooses your playstyle. It's pretty much the weapons and the armor that you pick up that decide, well, the weapons, armor you pick up and decide to use that will guide your experience throughout the world. So without further ado, Stark, let's jump into the weapon choices because we have six different ones in here. Naming them off right before we go into detail, we got two-handed, dual-wield. So tool hits two-handed, space, dual wield, one-handed and shield, got bow, destruction staves, and restoration staves. So those are the six topics we're going to cover here, and then we'll get into some armor. So Stark, you want to kick us off with two-handed weapons?
Okay, so two-handed weapons are your large, your great swords, your mauls, your battle axes, big hulking weapon you'll slap people around with. Primarily, you're going to be using these for DPS, and that's should be fairly obvious. You've got a large sword, you want to hit somebody with it. For the most part, you're going to be wanting to hit other players with these, though. These excel more in PvP than in PvE. They can deal out a lot of damage quickly, but it's a lot harder to keep a fight going for an extended period with them. On top of that, they do offer multiple options for what your weapons will do. So there's one skill line that covers all of these, and you'll pull out these weapons and use them, and which weapon you've got specifically will affect slightly what it does. Your greatswords will do slightly more damage. Your maces will bypass some of the target's damage resistance. Mm. And depending on what you're facing, one or the other of these might be better. And then axes, when you attack somebody, have a chance of applying a bleed debuff on them, which is a DOT.
So not only do we have two-handed the category, but we've got different weapon choices, swords, maces, and axes that each do their own thing within that category.
Yeah, and this should be slightly familiar if you've played Skyrim, because that game used the similar breakdown between the different weapon types. I want to say the exact effects were slightly different, but the basic idea was there. You'd have one skill line for this weapon type by the way you wielded it, and then the specific weapon you were using was slightly distinct.
Now, I've recently tried two-handed. I think that there's a lot to be said. We'll, you know, kind of talk about this as we go through. But for me personally, two-handed didn't appeal to me. I understand the strengths of this option, but two-handed for me feels very slow in the sense that it is, you know, a lot of charge up and a singular hit versus one of our next topics, which will be dual wielding, which tends to be a little bit more stabby.
There are ways to do two-handers that are a little bit faster. Mm. Personally, I use Carve and then combo that with Executioner. But yeah, it's generally speaking, it's a larger, slower, more cumbersome weapon, and that actually reflects in how it plays.
Uh-huh.
So you can actually see and experience that. It's also a weapon that when it connects can hit really hard. So when you're dealing with another player and they don't generally have a lot of health, mm-hmm. it can be very easy just to wreck someone quickly and then move on with your day. Whereas with dual wield, you're going to have to work a little harder to do that, but it's a lot easier to keep going.
That makes sense. And throughout this, one of the things we're going to encourage is that you really pick these weapons up as you go throughout your questing and, you know, throughout your day. Try them out, because there's a very different feel, in a good way, to these different sword and different weapon combinations. They feel really distinct, at least in my opinion. And like I said, right off the bat, two-handed doesn't appeal to me, but dual wield does. And so you kind of mentioned two-handed is considered... now. We're not saying this is the hard and fast rule, but it is considered to be the DPS primarily for PvP.
Yeah.
And then that leaves us with dual wield being a more primary PvE type of DPS.
Yep.
Well, then let's tackle that one really quickly.
Yeah. So with dual wield, the catch is it's a lot harder to get those really heavy hits in. You can heavy attack with it, and you know that will connect for quite a bit, but... in general, the weapon is not going to be, you know, just you're charging up this single hit that will decimate someone. Instead, it's a lot of smaller strikes, and it's got a lot of DOTs that are just built straight into the skill line. It's most of the abilities can apply a bleed or can apply something similar, or they can buff you in some way. So it has that. And the other thing about dual wield that's unusual is a lot of the abilities have a sort of heal effect on them based on the damage dealt. This is true of the ultimate. It's true of twin slashes, so one of the first abilities you unlock. It's true of the quick flurry of blows, or at least one of the morphs of it. So you've got all these options where if you go this route, you can actually have it healing you while you're damaging someone. And because of how PvP scales damage in this game, that's a lot more effective in PvE when you're dealing with NPCs rather than dealing with another player.
Aha. And you mentioned something else there, Stark, that these... each weapon has a very distinctive skill line that goes with it. So when you're leveling these up, you start at a level one when you pick up let's say you equipped a two-hand weapon. You are level one now with two-handed weapons as soon as you go out and swing that baby. And then you're leveling that from 1 to 50 in its own way. And as that skill, or as you level up that skill line for the weapon, you're unlocking different abilities that you can use. Ones that you'll spend skill points to unlock, and they themselves will have morphs, which I think I don't even know if we really talked about that yet on the podcast.
About that earlier, but yeah.
Yeah, a little bit there, huh?
So, actually, there's one really important distinction to drop in here, and this is when you first make a character, you're not going to see your class, you're not going to see your skill lines at all for your weapons.
Ooh.
Those actually unlock once you kill somebody with one of those. So I think with a tutorial, it would default to giving you a two-hander and say, okay, now slap that thing, and then the skill line will unlock. To unlock the others, you just need to kill something with that weapon equipped, and it'll unlock, and then you can see what the weapon will do.
Great point. And that's kind of the game's way of not overburdening you so that when you load into the world, you're not like, oh my goodness, what am I actually looking at here? They slowly piecemeal that to you as you get that. I find it, personally speaking, to be a very fun process to level up these different weapons, because now I'm sure when you're on your 15th character, it's maybe no longer as exciting, but when you're in the early days, they're very, very distinct in each of the skills that you get. Some of them overlap a little bit, but it's still really, really cool to try out the differences. I mean, just recently I rolled my first two-handed character. Like I said, didn't love that so much, so I swapped back to dual wield, but still fun to unlock those different skills within it and see what they do, and especially the passives that go along.
Yeah.
Rolling right along while we're talking about melee weapons, let's switch to tanking here for just a sec. Stark, want to tell us about the one hand and shield line?
Yeah, one sec. Sorry about that. So with one hand and shield, this is actually for tanking. and you just straight up use this to take more damage. The very first ability you'll unlock will allow you to taunt targets. Mm-hmm. I believe we mentioned that. And this will have the effect of making sure that an enemy attacks you specifically as opposed to the other people around you. Fortunately, this also comes with a lot of stuff that will beef you up and make you more durable. And at one point in the game's life cycle, it was actually fairly common for players to run around in light armor and a sword and board.
Oh,
because
really?
Of the way, yeah, because of the way light armor used to scale.
Huh.
So wow. That's changed. I would not recommend doing that, but it used to be the thing. I think this skill is very important for being able to be the tank and be able to take the beatings that you're going to end up taking if you want to be the one getting hit by the boss.
Right.
It's got some other options to let you move around quickly, and it shares that with two-handed, actually. Dual wield does not have a gap closer built in. So if you see somebody over there and you want to go make friends in person and stab them, then your sword and board will let you do that before it realizes the DPS is there and wants to turn them into paste.
Yeah, that's how I make most of my friends. I run up and stab them, Stark. That's my mantra.
It explains so many things. Yes.
Yeah.
Couple of things about this. One is never, ever use a sword and board for DPS outside of player versus player combat. In PvP, you can sometimes use the sword and board as the optimal choice for DPS simply because you're dealing with another player and taunting them isn't a problem. But in most content, your damage is going to suffer more than the survivability will make it worth your time. So that's something just to keep in mind. And the other thing is, unlike the two-handed and unlike dual wield, the sword and board doesn't actually provide any unique buffs based on the weapon type, which can be a little strange because you'll come from dual wield where it has a similar system to the two-handed. Your swords do more damage, your axes bleed, your maces bypass armor, and in the case of dual wield, your daggers will increase your crit chance. None of that happens with your sword and board. You can take a dagger, the very same dagger, and swap the offhand your offhand slot from another weapon to a shield, and it will change to just increasing your weapon damage. So this gives you some freedom if you're trying to get a tank set put together. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about farming for the right weapon type. Mm. Just finding any one-handed weapon for a tank will work.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, opinion-wise, is there any primary best weapon they could use in that slot? I mean, I guess if everything is, quote-unquote, everything's a sword,
it really doesn't matter. Well, yeah.
There you go. Aesthetics, everybody. You could go with whatever you get first or whatever you think.
And even then, like, because of the outfit system, aesthetics can be whatever you want. So you can swap that out for a different weapon. This
talk about a free-form game, Stark. So many options. So that you definitely were like, I like that point you said that you definitely don't want a DPS with a one hand and a shield unless you're doing PvP. Seems like a good way to ruin a dungeon trip if you're accidentally doing that. It might result in some people being a little feisty with you if they find out.
Yeah, if you're taunting, stealing taunt from the tank, that can really annoy people quickly.
Yeah, if you're not used to MMOs, that's bad etiquette.
Yeah. On the other hand, it also has a built-in, it's not actually a full route, but it is a slow effect on it. So you can actually, you can run over, jab somebody, and then make sure they can't run away. So there is also that. Like, actually a really viable tool set for PvP. But it is something you want to think of a bit carefully if you're planning on doing anything DPS related with it, because that's really a PvP only option.
Very cool. We'll get back to tanking here in a little bit with a surprise option up ahead. I don't know if you guys are going to see this coming, but before we get to that, let's talk bows. So we're already going down a primary... everything we've talked about so far is primarily stamina-based. I mean, you're running up and you're actually hitting them. So bows here, same thing. Now, bows are ranged stamina weapons, and they work best at long range. Is that correct, Stark?
Yeah. There's a passive, I think it's Eagle Eye, but
I'm pretty certain you're right.
That will increase your damage at long range. So bows are a little complicated to run because part of it is you're wanting to be at long range, but you still need to be close enough to benefit from any party buffs getting thrown around. And if you get far enough away, you're really limited to one ability that is, it does significant damage, but it's not great, which is snipe. Mm. But the trade-off with the bow is you have a lot of freedom to move around, because unlike other stamina characters, you don't need to be standing right next to the boss or whatever you're trying to kill. And you also have a lot of options for both moving enemies away from you And for dealing damage to a specific area, there's both a conal attack and then there's also a planted circular AoE you can put down.
Love it.
And also you have the option to dodge. When you dodge roll while using a bow, you actually get the ability to move faster for a set amount of time. Again, a lot of these are actually coming off of passives. So when you look at the weapon and you first pick it up, it's like, well, it does all of these things. And you're like, well, I don't see any of that. You'll unlock it over time. You'll have to play it for a little while to start unlocking these options. But the basic structure with the bow is it does give you a lot of options to move around at range and pick at the enemies. The trade-off is most of the time you're going to be doing less damage than you would on another stand build or with a staff. So it is something where it's like you do have to have a reason, have a way to justify your presence that way, either in utility or another function.
Ah, good point. As I say, I don't really see a lot of primary bow wielders out there.
They're out there, but it's a mix. You have some players who said, okay, the bow is cool. I'm going to do this. You have some players that picked it up because they played bow snipers, or, you know, stealth snipers in Skyrim, which it's valid. Like, it actually works.
Mm-hmm.
But in a lot of players, once you get to a certain point, it becomes a lot more difficult to use it, at least as your primary weapon. And it is doable, though.
It's a very interesting lore. I mean, lore-wise, you know, in any fantasy world, bows are such an important component. I wish we could see a little bit more of them out there.
Yeah.
But I understand the trade-offs there.
Yeah. And it is a really good weapon if you know what you're doing. So certainly something to keep in mind and certainly something to learn about and learn to use.
Right. Yeah. We always encourage, during the Twitch streams that I do, I always get people to come in and say, can I do this, that, and the other? And we emphasized this last week, but in Elder Scrolls Online, there are really very few things in the game would we really discourage you from doing, or at least trying, because, picking up a different weapon and exploring, it's a great way to find out if it fits your personal agenda in the game. If you want to be a primary bow-wielding person, if you learn it well, like just Stark said something along this line a second ago, if you actually learn the ins and outs of it and can make the best of it, we encourage you to do so. There's some things that are considered more normal or more traditional in Elder Scrolls Online, but that shouldn't dissuade you from trying, experimenting, and perfecting your own craft. While we're on the note of ranged, let's get into destruction staff, Stark. These are your primary for... you usually see your more sorcerer-style classes, your magic wielders using these, but there's an interesting caveat here. Do you want to start with the frost, or do you want to talk about the Inferno and Lightning first?
Let's start with the Inferno and Lightning first.
Okay, because these are your more traditional DPS ones.
Yeah, and they're more convenient, too, to explain, because they're... The difference between the two is you want to use fire when you're focusing on a single target, and you want to use lightning when you're dealing with lots of opponents.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them have, and all three actually, have the same basic abilities. So there's just one destruction staff skill line. There's not three separate ones. And you'll pick up an ability like clench, and that will change depending on which kind of staff you have equipped. If you have a flame staff, it will do one thing. You know, it'll do the same damage and it'll do some of the same effects, but then it'll have an additional effect attached to it. And if you switch to from an inferno to a lightning, that will change. I might be mistaken here, but as I recall with clench, what it does is if you have lightning, it'll interrupt and stun. If you have flame, it'll knock them down. And then if you have frost, it'll immobilize them. They can't move. And on the surface, this creates this image where it's like you can pick whichever one you want and they'll all operate independently of one another and just basically provide the same thing. But that's not quite true. Because the Frost Staff is very different from the other two.
Mm-hmm.
What it does is when you're unlocking passives, so this is where these powers come from, these traits that make them distinct from one another. One of the first things it will do is gain the ability to taunt on a heavy attack. And then simultaneously, it will change it so that when you block, it will cost magicka instead of stamina to block. This results in a weapon that is designed at first glance, and for the most part, for tanking. It has uses in PvP, because when you're dealing with an opponent, they can't be taunted. And especially if you're on a magicka build, you're going to have a lot more magicka burn in blocking when you get hit. But it does create a very different situation when you're trying to take this into normal PvE content, because now when you heavy attack, instead of just getting your resources back, you're also going to be drawing the attention of the boss. And as we just mentioned, that can be a very bad thing.
Yeah, and we talked about the etiquette in PvE content and your dungeon content and trials earlier, just for a split second. And this is one of those things that, just like you don't want to be running a sword and shield for DPS in that content, you don't want to be running a frost staff, just because you will irk the actual tank in the group among the other players, especially a healer who is now trying to heal you as the poor DPS that is blasting the big boss with your frost staff, even though you're squishy. So as much as it's sad that you're losing the ability to be a frost staff wielder, don't do it for your own health.
Yeah. Also, remember that when you start pulling aggro off the boss, you can actually cause wipes in some situations.
Yeah.
There's a reason this is an etiquette violation. It can kill everybody in the party.
And that's not how we make friends. I mean, earlier, Stark, I did say I like to jump up and stabby stab my friends, but I don't like to bring the boss to stabby stab my friends. See the difference there?
No, you need the personal touch. It's different.
You got it.
That said, if you are running a tank, this is one of only the two. There's only three ways you can conveniently taunt something in the game, and this is one of them. So if you're running a tank and you've got, especially a warden tank, and you want to have a way to reach out and grab the boss without giving up a skill slot, this is one of the options. I wouldn't recommend running a tank without a sword and board. But if you want a back bar, which is to say, have a frost staff on the other your other weapon bar, it's not the worst option, even if I wouldn't recommend it.
That's a good point. That's a very, very good point. And again, something to play with. Now, you did mention that this could be, you can use this. I think we must have said this off air before we got on, that you can run a frost staff if you so choose in PvP content, right? Not
because
taunting the enemy.
Yeah, because the same functionality there becomes much more useful. The frost staff focuses and immobilizes, which prevents enemies from moving around, and that can be really convenient when you just want to make an enemy, want to make another player sit, stay, and play dead.
I find that's the best way to do it. I wish I was a little bit better at that. But so you can run a frost staff as a DPS in PvP. You'll see, you might notice that we also said the same exact thing for the one-handed shield, that you don't DPS with it outside of PvP. PvP changes the rules just because you cannot taunt a human player in the same way that you can an NPC boss. So if you want to use it, by all means, in PvP, give it a whirl. So again, that's lightning for your AoEs, and that's Inferno stats for your single targets.
Yeah. As a result, there's a little bit of a class bias here, because, and I know we've been talking about this overrides your class, but lightning will work better for sorcerers for the most part. They have more AoE abilities to begin with, but they also have a synergy for dealing lightning damage, like several built into their passives for the class. So they do better on lightning staves than any of the other classes do. For Inferno staves, they work really well on DKs. Again, same basic idea. They have a lot of abilities that synergize off of setting things on fire, dealing fire damage. I think they have a passive that increases their fire damage passively as well. And then also the Inferno staff is really good for Nightblades, because they're going to be doing a lot of single target damage anyway.
I was going to ask why that is.
Yeah. Finally, the Frost staff does synergize pretty nicely with the Warden, because they have an innate frost damage increase along with everything else. They're also slightly more resistant to it, because they have bonuses that will help to resist remove the immobilize and root effect. So that one kind of cuts both ways. You're better defended against a frost staff if you're a warden, but you're also better able to use one. Again, that's going to be mostly in PvP.
And this is a total side note, but I think I just started my warden last time we were on the air, and that is a really fun class. I mean, I've just been loving that guy like crazy, and I know exactly what passives you're talking about right now.
Yeah.
I don't know. So if anyone's looking, if you're ever on the fence, I know we talked all about different classes last week, but man, that's such a versatile class to get in and play with. They're really good on sustainability too. So if you guys are like, what do I do? Consider that one. I mean, more than anything I've played yet, guy's just got a lot of versatility.
Yeah.
And actually, so right now I'm using a mag warden, so a magical warden. He's rocking a lightning staff for exactly what Stark said, the AoEs there, for one of those skills. And then he'll actually be rocking what we're going to be talking about next. Anything else to add for destruction, Stark?
Not really, no.
So his other bar is a restoration staff, because my guy's doing half and half right now, mainly playing with other people. So I'm doing half damage, half healing. So restoration staff's one of my favorites. I main a healer, and for a healer, this is going to be your primary tool. It is definitely healing focused, and also for applying buffs to your allies. Cool things about the restoration staff line is that you're unlocking some really cool spells. You got things like a prayer, combat prayer. I can't think of its unmorphed name, but it increases the protection to your friends that it hits and increases their damage.
Yeah, I'll look it up
prayer
right
protection,
now.
I think.
Prayer, blessing, and protection.
That's it. So yeah. You're buffing them. For anyone that's used to the traditional style of like healers being able to shield people, you have a shield option in there, as well as a heal over time. You got a big old area heal. It's a very fun line. Some of their passives are cool because you can regenerate more magicka back whenever you do a heavy attack, and that's really key for sustain if you're running low on magicka. What else you got in mind for restoration staff, Stark?
One thing I would warn against is the ultimate panacea. Like, you're not going to see this until you max out the skill line anyway, but it works very well in PvP. In PvE, it's a little bit underwhelming. So, take that one carefully.
Used it for a while on my healer, just as I was figuring out what skills to go with, and it is really good as an oh shit button when you're learning to heal, but I mean, I think you're
it's
right. There's a lot of things.
Severe diminishing returns. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, I actually even forget what all it does, but it has one. Does it apply a major heal over time? Is that what it is?
No. What it does is, so the first thing is just going to give you an ally. It's a fairly decent heal over time, but yeah. it's a short one. It applies to you and an ally. One of the morphs will cause half of the skill line to just pop off at random, and the other one will give them major force and major protection. So it increases their crit damage and their damage take, and reduces their damage taken, which, like, they're nice. These are nice buffs, but it's not really worth your ultimate if you're the there's a lot more important thing than that.
Yeah. So, I mean, something to mess around with if you want to try it out. I rocked it for a little bit. It was kind of fun, but it's not the best. Also, Stark, while we're here, this is me getting a little bit into the weeds, but do you have any thoughts on the force siphon ability that you get from the resto staff? That's one of the last abilities that focus your staff's power to apply minor lifesteal to an enemy for 20 seconds, healing you and your allies. Do you do that?
I've never used that. As far as I know, it's actually useful.
It is.
But that's not one that I've actually had any problems.
Apparently, it also can apply minor magicka steal. Oh, cool.
Yeah. So those are actually, that's a weird little thing, because it used to be it would just straight up return those resources to you, I think. I know that was the case with a couple of Templar abilities that used to straight, just give your party members resources back. When Morrowind released, a lot of stuff was changed to reduce overall sustain, because the game had gotten to a point where you could take burst sustain belts into content, and between stuff like the Nightblade Siphon ability, Leeching Strikes, and the Templar abilities where you just give everybody resources back, it was getting to a point where you could just burst constantly through an entire fight, and sustain wasn't as much of a factor. So that was all toned down severely. That was, I believe, when they added Health Steal, Magicka Steal, and I forget what the Stamina Stealing one is called.
Those
work. They'll get you resources back. They'll get you health back for attacking. You're going to be doing that anyway. So it's not a bad buff. It's just I'm not sure if it's a good buff.
Good
point.
And
that's personal experience entirely.
And yes, as a reminder for everyone, you're spending your skill points in these. And then once you level up an individual skill, you get it past level 4. So levels 1, 2, 3. And once the bar fills up the fourth time, you can morph it 2 different directions. It's kind of the fork in the road with your skills. You're just going to choose 2 different benefits you're choosing from 2 benefits of which way you want to go with it. But we can happily field questions to that sort of stuff in the future for skill spending.
Personally, for me at least, I've spent much more time working with the morphs of Grand Healing, Regeneration, and Blessing of Protection, because those are some really nice workhorse abilities. Staff.
Yeah, healing in this game is very fun. And I honestly, ESO changes my thinking on a lot of different class, like typical class things from other games. I actually really want to try tanking in this game, especially because you can do such odd stuff as using like a frost staff or like we were saying. Mm-hmm. It's just, it breaks the norm from other games. They're like, nope, if you're a tank, you're just a sword and shield tank. Get used to it.
That's actually one of the differences right here, because the resto staff used to be, I mean, looking back at like 2014, the resto staff was the de facto back bar choice for a tank.
Wow.
You would take your resto staff in and you would switch to that to apply buffs and to assist your healing if you needed it, but straight up to apply buffs. Wow. And that's changed because the staff has changed, but you still will see tanks running a resto staff as their back bar option, because like you pointed out, you can get magicka back from, you can get other resources back from. I think Healing Springs is the one that actually provides magicka for each friendly target healed.
Correct.
And that can help. You drop this stuff down there, and then it can help provide resources you need to do your tank things.
So this is kind of a moment where I would like to reemphasize. I think we mentioned this last week for a bit. But the idea, and maybe we didn't, I don't remember if we got into this into any sort of detail. But again, experiment with these skills. Try them out. See what you like. Because guides online will tell you to go a certain way. But I got to say, I've been running this Warden guy without using any guides, without any reference. And I'm sure, you know, if I were to actually look at his actual damage output, it's not stellar. But I'm actually having fun figuring out what works in what way instead of just taking someone online saying, do this, that, or the other. And a point that Stark and I have commiserated on in the past is when someone makes a guide, they are making it for their own play style. And if you're not there yet, you actually might be, it might be detrimental to you. The things that they might be telling you to do in that guide, if you're not comfortable with that mechanic yet, can hurt you. So really explore, put things together on your own, see what you like, and kind of where that nets you out. That's the, I think, one, some of the glory about this game overall. We get a lot of questions about that specifically. Should I follow this person's advice? Well, yes, but also explore.
Yeah. One example of this, and this is somebody I actually deeply respect. Alcast is a really great guy, and he's a fantastic player. He's also fairly careful to provide you with, this is what you should use when you're starting out and learning a build, and then this is the more advanced stuff. I see a lot of players that look at that and think, oh, this is the gear I use until I can get the gear that's at the advanced end of the spectrum. And that's really not true. And this is, in a lot of cases, you're looking at trying to learn how to play the build as you're progressing through. And for some people who post their builds online, like if you asked me to post my builds, I can show you what I'm running. I can show you some of the thought process that led to their creation, but you're not going to be able to actually use it because it's built around a play style rather than it just being, oh, hey, here's a thing. So it's important when you're looking at guides like that to see if there's an introduction to this is how you learn the play style for this build and see if that fits, rather than just going, oh, I can get all the pieces I need to finish this out, because it's not just a gear progression issue.
Yeah, I know. I think you're completely right with that one, Stark. I actually heard this weekend, too. I know we need to talk about some armor choices, too. But I heard someone came into Twitch and said, hey, I heard that we can't, or that the end game, I'm sorry, they came in and immediately said, I heard that this game doesn't start until I hit level 50. Is that right? That I'm not doing anything of value until level 50? And I said, hold on, wait, no, stop. That's way off base. This game lets you explore and do all your things, play with many different concepts of the game, from dungeons and everything in between, from almost minute one of rolling that character. We've talked about there's tiny limitations, and I'm pretty sure we talked about that in our first episode. But really, it's a journey, not the destination sort of game. I mean, it's your choice of what speed you want to get to a destination, but nothing wrong with taking the time to smell the roses and just enjoy it as you go through, because this game is so beautiful. There's so much great content in it. You know, but we are encouraging you here to pick up different weapons and play with them. See what you like, see what you don't. It might influence you to go back and create a different character. That's what happened to me. That warden, my magicka warden, is an offshoot of me trying a stamina warden first and saying, crap, these abilities are so great in two different directions. I want one of each. And I'm sure, Stark, you can tell me if I'm wrong, you have a, probably a bunch of different characters that are split in different directions.
I have three of every class.
I knew it.
Yeah. The one I don't have any alternate versions of is the Nightblade. I keep trying to make new ones, and then it's like, yep, it's another Standblade.
See, there
that happened.
But that's awesome. That's so cool that, like, so again, don't worry about rushing it to the end. That's my advice. If you're still on the fence about picking a class, it took me three tries before I found a character that I actually wanted to level beyond level 10. You know, and maybe I probably should have stuck with all of them a little bit longer, but truth be told, I was just looking to feel what felt right. I rolled a sorcerer, and I didn't love him at first. Rolled a Templar. I kind of like him, but I kind of want to try Nightblade. Then I was like, oh, Nightblade. There we go. Yeah. Took him all to 50. So
something that's worth mentioning, yeah, though, on this subject, because of the way ESO is structured, you don't really start to feel the difference between the classes until you get further in. So
good point.
There is a reason to spend some time with it and actually look carefully and say, well, will this work for what I want to do? And just, again, you do need to feel it out, but understand that it will actually change how it feels and get more unique as you go further. If you're looking at a class and going, this doesn't have much flavor to it, it'll come. It'll get there.
Yeah, and that's why I'm so excited to go back and finish out on some of those people I started. Like, I'm still at the point in my playthrough where sorcerers aren't standing out to me. I'm just like, I know I want to eventually, but I'm like, okay, their flavor hasn't hit me yet, and I'm just not there. But eventually, I'm sure I will. I'm like, you know, there's already things I'm excited about to do with it. But again,
oh, yeah, and there's some really fun stuff you can do with sorcs that you just cannot duplicate on other classes.
Speaking about sorcs, let's tie that right into our next topic, Stark. Armor. Okay. What type of armor would a sorc use?
And it depends on the sorc. This is one of the ones where it's like, I've got one in each.
There we go. Okay. So what are we have three different armor choices, right?
Yeah, we do. And this is actually going to run right up against the thing where we're like, yeah, just grab whatever and feel it out. We're about to tell you one time when you do not want to do that. So you have three types of armor in the game: light, medium, and heavy. Light is primarily your mage type gear. Mm-hmm. It's your robes, it's your cloth, fabric, stuff like that. If you're using staves, you want to wear this stuff. And the reason is because your magicka weapons scale based on your max magicka and scale based on your spell damage. And your light armor will build into making characters that use this. So you can run with light armor and you can, you know, be your mage type that you want. Now, this isn't the only time you'll use staves, because we just talked about tanks earlier, but primarily you're going to want to use your staves with that. And you're probably not going to want to use a stave with medium armor. You're also probably not going to want to run a sword and board today with light armor or a bow or either a two-hander or dual wield, because those are all building off your stamina and your max stamina and your weapon damage. And you won't get any benefit from that from your light armor choice.
That makes sense.
So primary function for light armor, it's also really efficient for casting. If you're running a light armor build, you're going to be able to throw a lot of magic around. Sustain is this thing you'll learn as you're playing, and it'll get harder as you're playing because you're going to be burning through your resources faster. But light armor, especially as you get higher in levels, is a lot more efficient about this. It's also got a built-in shield, so even if you didn't get a damage shield from your class, you can get it from your light armor. Really nice.
Yeah. The passives are really, really cool. Like, I just pulled them up online. It's fun. I like the way that they did this whole thing, that you're not just equipping armor, but you're actually investing in your armor. And I shouldn't say the specific type of... Sorry, not talking each individual piece of gear that you pick up, but you're investing in a classification of armor. So passives read something like this. For light armor, your first one reduces magicka cost of spells by percentage. Second is your magicka recovery goes up by a certain percentage. Third one, you get a spell resistance for each piece of light armor you're wearing. And I think, is this the last one? No, okay, two more. And one increases your spell critical rating, so now you're getting actual damage boost from it there. And finally, spell penetration. So really, as you invest in your armor, you are reaping better benefits, which makes the whole leveling process feel really, really fun.
There's two really interesting things about armor, quickly. Mm-hmm. One of them is, like, the first one you listed off is reduced spell cost.
Yeah.
That's actually not just percentage. It's percentage per piece of light armor equipped.
Good call.
So there is a situation with this game where you'll sometimes want to wear some pieces of one armor weight and some pieces of another.
Mix it
usually
match.
You're going to be splitting with either light or medium and heavy. You don't usually want to mix light and medium together. But the way it's set up, yeah, you get benefit for each piece slotted if you've got the passives purchased. And the more pieces you wear, the bigger that bonus gets. So that cost discount, I think, gets to 14% when you're wearing full light armor, which is a lot of discount on your all your magic abilities if you're committing to that.
Yeah, that's a lot. Now, there is in the armor tree, Stark, and I don't mean to get too in the weeds with this, but there is an active spell that you can use that you can, you know, invest a skill point in each of the armor trees.
Yeah.
So, for example, looking at light still, you get annulment, and this requires 5 pieces of light armor to be equipped.
Mm-hmm.
And it surrounds you with a magic negation that absorbs, you know, up to a certain amount of magic damage.
Yeah.
Thoughts on that? Is that something people run, or is this an outdated feature?
No, that's absolutely useful. Annulment morphs to harness magic, I believe.
Yep.
You're the one that's actually got the thing in front of you. Yeah, okay. That is absolutely critical for a lot of Magicka builds outside of Sorcerers.
Ah.
Because that's a fairly substantial damage shield that can be the difference between eating the dirt and, you know, winning.
So that morph absorbs Magicka based on the number of light armor pieces you have equipped. I see. Yep. And then let's see, medium armor gets evasion, so you can shroud yourself in a mist to gain major evasion, which increases your dodge chance.
This is an ability that the Nightblades get naturally. Mm-hmm. They have blur, so it costs magicka. It's the same benefit, though. And everybody else has to get it through medium armor. The reason those require you to have 5 pieces slotted is because in PvP, people were running evasion on heavy armor belts.
Oh.
It was miserable to deal with. Because they'd slot that, and then they would be impossible to kill.
Yeah, I can't hit you, and when I do, you have a bunch of heavy armor on.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Heavy armor gives you immovable, which will, the big thing about it is it will prevent you from getting knocked around or moved against your will. And I think there's a resist buff also on that, but I don't remember offhand.
Let's see. Yes, you gain major resolve and major warding, so it increases your physical resistance and spell resistance.
Yep. So that one actually lets tanks cheese and revive people in some situations where you normally can't. I don't know if you've run White Gold Tower on, White Gold Tower on any difficulty yet, but
yes.
When you're running that, you're going to get knocked around a lot by the environment. And this is not unique to that situation. There's a number of cases where it's like a boss or an enemy will throw something at you and it'll stagger you or it'll knock you around.
Right.
You activate that, then you start rezzing, and if you're hit by one of these attacks while you're rezzing, you don't move. You just stand there and the rez continues. So it has a very specific use, and it can be very useful.
That makes me think we should talk dungeon etiquette at some point in the future. Who rezzes
probably
when,
should.
How to do this, that, and other, just best practices. We'll think about that for an upcoming episode here and kind of give some of those ideas.
Yeah.
So sorry, anyway. I feel like I really derailed us by bringing up these skill points, but that's
okay.
Interesting.
But they're useful, and it's important to know about those because you'll see them and you'll be like, what do I do with this? They're useful, but they're all selectively useful except for Harness Magicka. If you're running a Magicka build and you're not a Sork, you want that.
Interesting.
Anyway,
now I want.
So we've got medium.
Yes.
And this is going to be your leather armor, so you'll wear this if you're playing a thief type or an assassin type character. Basically, any kind of stamina DPS, you'll probably want to be running medium. It increases your recovery rates. It increases your weapon crit, increases your weapon damage. This is something you don't get from your light armor for spell damage. That doesn't get increased. Instead, with that, you actually get spell penetration, which bypasses enemy resistance. This boosts your straight-up damage. It's not exactly that one or the other is better. It's just you have targets to hit on penetration before it stops being valuable, whereas you can always use extra damage. It also is the primary method for sneaking completely across the board. If you want to play a character that's stealthy, and that is absolutely viable in this game for most non-group content, you really do want the ability to sneak around. That's medium armor. It'll make you harder to detect. It'll shrink the size of your detection radius around you. while you're sneaking, and it will also reduce the cost of sneaking because there's a stamina cost for each, I think it's distance traveled in stealth. And that will reduce that. It is possible by stacking a couple of buffs together from different sources to actually reduce your stealth cost to zero.
Wow. Yeah, I could see that. There's some other things out there in the game I've noticed. Pretty cool.
Yeah. And, but that's the short version of medium armor. If you're doing stam DPS, you really want this.
That leaves us with our last one, which is heavy armor.
So heavy armor is a little more complicated because it does a couple of things. One is it just makes you harder to kill. It's going to give you the best protection in the game, and the skill line will boost that even further. If you're wanting to play a tank, you need heavy armor, straight up. It's very useful. You want this. It will keep you alive. It also increases your max health. It increases your health recovery for what that's worth. It increases your healing received. So there's a sort of pattern here, right?
Yeah.
And then it also does something else that's really interesting and affects how tanks work in this game. It gives you resources back.
Ooh.
When you heavy attack, you get resources back normally. Heavy armor increases the resource return from that. Heavy armor gives you a little bit of resources back whenever you're hit by something. So you take a hit, and it'll give you a little bit of resource. It's about 200 per piece equipped when you're finally maxed out. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but it's significant over the course of a fight when you're the tank. And the reason is, most of the time we're talking about either stamina or magicka, and I haven't specified that at all with tanks, because you're probably going to be using both pools. Most of the classes that have tanking abilities are going to cost magicka cast. And at the same time, when you're blocking, except on an ice staff, you're going to be costing stamina to take the hits. So, and this is in addition to using stuff like the sword and board abilities that are also stamina based. So you can burn through both resource pools. Because you're not worried about outgoing damage as a tank, you don't have to worry about either pool being particularly large. So you can alternate between them and actually get more value that way, in a way you don't see as DPS, where you're more concerned about how much damage you're actually dealing. And you see a lot of buffs that are, you know, like, we're talking about major and minor buffs here, stuff like your resistance is being increased by a certain amount, or stuff like the lifesteal one earlier, that is just, it's a fixed amount based on you apply this buff, and then every time someone light attacks, that amount's refunded to them. This really benefits for tanks, because if they're the ones casting those, it doesn't matter what their stats are.
Wow,
just so long as they can cast it. The other use for heavy armor is for PvP. And this is, like, I've been calling it PvP DPS, but PvP really can get into weird hybrid play. You'll see healers in PvP running heavy armor because it makes them harder to kill and because other players will want to snuff the healer. You'll see DPS running heavy armor in PvP because they're trying to do damage to the target, but that means they need to stay alive long enough.
Yep.
And, yeah. So, on the whole, heavy armor is a really great option for PvP. It's not the only answer, but if you're expecting to get into heavy combat and just be right there in the middle of the fray, heavy armor is really advantageous. In PvE, when you're dealing with dungeons or when you're dealing with other content, it's really advantageous for the tank. And a lot of players, if they can, will throw a piece of heavy armor into the mix just to get the additional resistances and get some hint of the bonuses that you get as a tank.
Sure.
Without sacrificing all the stuff they get from their normal armor.
Well, that makes a ton of sense. Yeah. And in a few, well, I guess we could hesitate to mention this now, but there is a passive you will pick up eventually, part of a guild tree, that gives you a synergy for running a piece of each. Is that how it's from the Undaunted?
Yeah, the Undaunted have two that are relevant for this. So they've got one that's called Conditioning, which will give you an additional, it's first plus 1%, and then it becomes plus 2% bonus to all three of your stats for each piece equipped. So you'll sometimes see people telling you run 5-1-1, like run 5 pieces of your primary armor type, and then run 1 piece of each of the others. And the reason for this is you're going to try to get to the point where you can get the passives for all three, mm-hmm. the ones that work with a single piece equipped. And you need 5 pieces for some of your armor's functionality to work.
Sure.
For example, like with the heavy armor, we mentioned that it increases your healing received. That only works if you're wearing 5 pieces of it. it doesn't scale for the number of pieces worn. It just says straight up, you need 5 pieces or this buff doesn't activate. So for a lot of players, what you end up doing is you'll either run 5 pieces of your primary and 2 pieces of another, or you'll run 5-1-1. And if you're running 5-1-1, you get +6% to all three of your stat pool from this buff or from this passive. It's really useful. The other one from Undaunted will actually give you resources back and health back on every time you activate a synergy. You're going to unlock it along the way anyway, and it also really helps in group content, really helps for the tank, really helps for everybody. Because it's just, if you see that X pop up, you can mash it and get some stuff back.
Yeah, that's some pretty cool stuff. And I think one thing that'll be helpful for everyone, too, is, like Stark just mentioned, there's the benefits to wearing, some of the heavy armor here I'm looking at. It says, you know, 1 or more pieces equipped, and you get these passives. And then, like you said, there's a 5 or more. So in the show notes below, we will have it linked. There's the Elder Scrolls Online wiki has a great breakdown of the 3 different armor types. The weapons page for the content we talked about earlier is a little... I mean, it's fine. It gives basically what we said, but it's not as easy and straightforward. But anyway, both of these things will help when you kind of look at it and actually see, and you can start plotting that stuff out. So really, I really like the mechanics for it, Stark. The armor mechanic is really fun in this game, just to try those mix and matches and see what all passives you can gain.
It's going to sound weird, but ironically, the mix and match armor structure was one of the first things that really caught me about the game.
Really? All things? Huh.
Mm-hmm. Weird, huh?
It's weird, but it's very lore based, right? I mean, it's like in any fantasy game or art, you'll see mages that are wearing heavy armor and things like that. So
yeah,
there is some lore basis in all of fantasy that kind of fits this thing.
Well, in single player games, in the single player games, the sword class actually is heavy armor primarily. So it's like, yeah, this is not new or weird to Elder Scrolls at all.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that that's an option in the thing. I don't know. I think I used to rock back in like Oblivion or something, way throwback, but I think I used to have like a heavy armored mage going around in that game just because it was, you know, I think you lost some little spell damage or something for wearing it, but it was still...
No, you took a minor penalty for it, but yeah, it was entirely worth it because you soak up all these hits.
Well, hey, honestly, Stark, if I were going to be a mage out on the field, I think I would want some heavy armor on.
You'd want some armor. You would not want to go out there in a t-shirt.
Yeah. Sorry, this is my bathrobe. I'm just wearing this out for the
I'm
moment.
Just working on leveling my bathrobe right now. Please, if you just try not to stab me.
Yeah. Well, everyone, there you go. You can work on your bathrobe this upcoming week. That's your homework. Let us know how your bathrobe works out. We're getting a little bit low on time here. Actually, quite a bit low. We talked for a while about this, but I hope it was really good information. One thing we wanted to talk about from last week, and we didn't get the chance, this can be the real homework, is the skill advisor. This is something I really didn't know the capabilities of this thing until Stark told me one time when we were on Twitch. So if you open up, I think it's when you press K on a, when you're doing it on PC.
On PC. You bring up the skill advisor. I don't remember how to do it through the console UI, fortunately.
Sorry, console players. It pops up on screen when you go into your skill
menu.
Yeah. So when you're in the screen, it lets you put points into your crafting or your weapons or your whatever. On the left side of the screen, you'll see a little box. It'll show skills and some passives and things in there. And you can scroll through it. Now, that is telling you for a very basic character, hey, you've rolled a Nightblade. These are the skills we suggest you put some points into. However, what Stark told me that I had no idea was a thing until this point is I believe there's a little cog up there, and you can actually change and tell the skill advisor what you plan to do with your class. And this is a good idea. If you really don't know what you want to do with your class yet, you can kind of look through some of the pre-suggested things, because it'll say, are you looking to be a more support role? Are you trying to take this guy as a tank? Are you looking for stam DPS, magic DPS? And then it'll adjust its things accordingly. Now, Stark, there's also some downsides to this. Is that right?
Yeah, it's not perfect. It also, because of the way it defaults, it will sort of give you a flavor, sort of a flavor focus to start with, where it'll just sort of let you sample across what you're doing with your class. But yeah, there are some limitations because once you know what you're doing, it will definitely suggest stuff and you're like, no, that's not the ability I need. I'm trying to do. It's not going to give you perfect end game builds. For one thing, it's just going to be what you buy for your skill list, but it is an excellent place to start. And if you're thinking about, oh, I want to take this class and tank with it, or I want to take this class and learn how to DPS on it, it will give you some really good ideas on where to start looking.
And that's the key, really, is, you know, to get in there and feel that out. See what you're liking, what you're not. Try different things. I mean, I'm a broken record, but really,
try stuff.
It is trying and it's exploring, because I'm speaking just right off the heart from recent experience that I took a Templar and I did a very cookie cutter, because just with everything that was going on in life at the time, I was like, I really want to be questing with this guy, but I don't have the time at the moment to explore myself. And ditching the guide for my warden, like just going straight off the, just whatever, I'm like, that skill point sounds cool, has been a lot more fun.
Yeah.
So use the skill advisor to kind of guide you there too. I think that's a great point in saying that it's not infallible. It will tell you some things that might seem silly when you're a veteran player. But, you know, if you're trying to decide, well, damn, these two skills both sound cool, skill advisor saying this one's actually going to be more helpful for me, then try that one first. Can't hurt. Can always unspec or respec.
Yeah. Actually, worth remembering, you do get, this is related, there's a level up advisor that will give you rewards as you're leveling through the game. One of the things it will give you, I think it's at 49 or 50, is it'll just straight up give you a respec scrolls for both your attributes and your skill points. So if you get to the end, like you get to level cap and you realize, wait, I've made these mistakes and I don't want to pay the gold to respec, you can just do it for free then.
Yeah.
So learn as you're going and then fix it later. You'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that. Roll new characters whenever you're bored with one. Try something else out. I think, Stark, you dropped some good information earlier and said, but when you really want the flavor of a class, stick with it. And so there's definitely something to be said about longevity of it. But man, we had someone in Twitch the other day saying they were getting their butt kicked on their one character and they were dying over and over again. I said, you know, well, maybe just try, you know, you can either stick with this character, look up some guides, see where you're kind of maybe going wrong, you know, discuss with other players. Or if you're just, there's something that's with you in that class not clicking, that you don't like, that it's, you know, driving you in this one direction, try different things. See if that fits you better. Because I don't know, I've noticed that in myself, that, you know, sometimes I jive better with something and then other times I need to learn or work a little bit harder. When you're starting out in the game, that can be a little disappointing to get your butt kicked to and fro. So find something that doesn't. Anything else you want to add for this episode, Stark? I think this has been great in talking armor, weapons, skill advisor. That's a lot for 1 week.
Yeah, I think they were good. That's everything we were aiming to take today.
Uh-oh, I'm kind of losing you here on Discord for some reason. I'm not sure why that is, but luckily it's at the end of our episode.
Yeah.
So yes, we will leave you with that. We'll leave you with those. You can go and explore. Like I said, show notes below have links to the different weapon types, the different armor types. You can take those, go whatever direction you want with them. As a reminder, I'm trying to think. Stark, do you want to pimp any links and things for yourself?
No, not today.
Not today. Well, you can find him on Twitter. That's all. That's all in the below. So you can find me over on Twitch at twitch.tv/ Kyle Dempster Studios. You'll find Stark there most of the time, too. We were doing a very fun, like, I think we had like 9 people at one point doing public dungeons last night. It's crazy.
Yeah, slammed through a bunch of them.
Yeah, and I just got a bunch of, for those that don't know, we'll talk about this another time, but public dungeons are a good way to get a skill point when you do a group event. Just some nice player time with one another. So come hang out with us sometime on Twitch. I'm on Twitter at twitter.com/ Kyle Dempster Stu, STU, doesn't all fit. And the website for this, if you want to find anything else, is thetenets.com. Podcast.com. I had to think about it for a second. So that's the Tenets, TENETS podcast.com. You'll get the links to subscribe on many different platforms, including Spotify, iTunes, Android things, Google Play, anything you want. It's there. That'll do it for this episode. Let us know if you have any comments. Oh, also, I need to pimp that out. You can shoot us an email. I haven't set one up specifically for the show yet. So in the interim, just use kyledempsterstudios@gmail.com. That should be nice and easy for you guys to find that. Again, that'll be in the show notes below. So you can just shoot us off any questions you might have. Happy to field any of those. Go out there. Ask people questions. People love to answer in ESO. So if you see someone doing something you like, hit them up, ask for advice. Until next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
See ya.